The transition from an undergraduate to a graduate, this can be a difficult one because you lose all structure. You can do whatever you like as a PhD student. It's not like in America where you've got to do courses. In Australia, all you do is your thesis and nothing else. I spent 3 years on another scholarship, a PhD scholarship, playing tournament bridge almost every day. Yeah, and I didn't do any work on my PhD. Another dumb thing, of course. So towards the end of the 3 years of the scholarship, I was walking past the head of the department, and he walked past me, and then he turned around and called me back and said, "What are you going to be doing next year?" I wondered what he was going to say. He said, "How would you like to be a temporary lecturer? So-and-so has gone on sabbatical leave for a year, and I've forgotten to get a replacement." And that's where I sort of stopped being stupid, because I said yes to that. So I was a temporary lecturer for 2 years, did all my PhD data collection at night, so I was back on track there. And so after my PhD, my first permanent job was in a new department. And so there I was, finished a PhD at Sydney in 1967, and then I went to Monash. It was time to go overseas.
But how did you get started in doing the research that you did at that point?
Well, there was a topic that was currently very popular in the psychology of perception to do with the size-distance-invariance hypothesis, and it's to do with how we judge the size of things and how we judge their distance. And because I had to do my experiments at night, it was very convenient to do a study in which people, I'd pick up my subjects and I'd walk them around the building blindfolded so that they wouldn't know where they were in the building. And then I'd take them into a room and they wouldn't know which room, and they'd have to look through a pinhole at a disc of light, and they'd have to judge how big that disc of light was or how far away it was without any knowledge like how big the room was.
Right.
At monocular vision without any accommodation because you're looking through a pinhole. So then I was able to do cognitive things saying, suppose I tell you that thing is a foot across, how far is it away?
Yeah.
Then another subject I'd say, suppose I told you it was 3 feet across.
Yeah.
And the ones who said it was who I told it was 3 feet across, judged that it was farther away, which it would have to have been. But that means you can use cognitive information, like me saying 3 feet,
yeah,
to make perceptual judgments. Yeah, so you can see what I was trying to do, say,
yeah,
visual perception isn't just visual. There are cognitive, non-visual factors. And so that's what the whole PhD was about. I've always been much more theoretical psychologist than an empirical psychologist, so most of the things I've written have been comments on other people's data.
Yeah.
And psychology doesn't have enough theoreticians. If you talk to physicists, there are experimentalists who don't do theorizing, and there are theorists who, if they think of an experiment, they go and talk to the experimentalist and say, "Will you do this experiment for me?" And I think that's really good, but it doesn't happen in psychology.
Yeah.
There are very few purely theoretical psychologists. I think psychology needs many more of those. And I'm one, not because I've chosen to be, it's just because that's what suits me intellectually.